everybody. Welcome to episode 538 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and I'm going to be talking about one book that came out last week, October 3rd. That is Eclipse number 11 from writer Zach Kaplan, artist Giovanni Timpano, and colorist Flavio Dispenza. And then I'm also going to be talking about Infinite Dark, the first creator-owned book from Ryan Caddy, with art by Andrea Moody and colors by K. Michael Russell, also from Top Cow. We've had Zach Kaplan, the writer of Eclipse, on several times. Ryan's been on the show several times as well. They both specifically have been on to talk about these properties. So I'm not going to get too into the stories themselves, in as much as telling you kind of from the beginning what they're all about or doing recaps, because I think you can really, you know, look for those interviews with those specific creators that we've done before and kind of discover them for yourself. But what I do want to do is talk specifically about my thoughts on these couple of issues. And I do recommend you go back and listen to the interview that I did with Ryan about Infinite Dark, which was pretty recent, and any of the number of interviews I've done with Zach about Eclipse, a title that had me excited from the moment I heard the kind of the big idea of it, and has done nothing but exceed those expectations since it launched. I'm also going to play at the end of the episode for you an interview I did with Stephen Mooney, the artist on The Dead Hand for Image. I did the interview at New York Comic Con. It was great to talk to Steven and hear a little bit about his process and his thoughts and the unique challenges that The Dead Hand provided as a story. So, but before I get to that interview, let me talk first about Eclipse number 11. I said last time I covered an Eclipse issue, I did a little bit of a deeper dive on it. And I talked about the fact that this idea that Zach came up with is so interesting, right? This idea that the sun has evolved, it's morphed, it's changed to a point where it's deadly to us humans. We can no longer survive by being in the sunlight. It will literally kill you in seconds. And it's a really interesting idea. It's an idea that's interesting to grasp and to think about humanity having to adapt in a nocturnal lifestyle and live underground. There's a lot there to explore. And that's what had me initially excited about the series. But what I've said before, and I still firmly believe, and it's borne out even more so in issue 11 than it was in 10, is that you come to the story for the big idea because it's cool and the world that Zach has created is interesting, but you stay for the characters. The characters he's created are so complex and so compelling, and they're not really the kind of characters that are black and white, that you know what this guy's doing is correct, and so he's the good guy, he's the white hat, and what this guy's doing is wrong, and so he's the black hat and he's the bad guy. It's much more complicated than that. You know, real life is not as cut and dried, as black and white, as old school TV westerns or old comic books for that matter. And I think as the comic book reading audience has gotten more sophisticated over the years, you as a writer and as a creator have to be able to tap into that. And Zach's done that expertly here. Nobody's 100% good and nobody's 100% bad in his world that he's creating here, but they are all interesting, and you do understand their motivations. You can see their point of view. It's a point of view you can understand, even if you personally don't necessarily agree with it. But what I really found myself thinking about with issue 11, based on the events, and again, I'm not going to spoil it. I know it was it came out a week ago, but a lot of people are at New York Comic Con, and I'm just going to keep it kind of purposely vague. But I will say this about issue 11. When people show you who they are, believe them. It's good advice for following what's going on in the story of Eclipse that Zach's telling. And it's good advice, I think, in life, right? When you see somebody act a certain way and make choices that kind of tell you who they are over and over and over, and then they come to you and say something different that's not borne out by their actions, and you believe them, and then it goes wrong, I don't know that you necessarily have a leg to stand on. They showed you all along through their actions who they were. And then because you wanted to believe it, when they told you something different, you chose to believe it. And that can ultimately lead to your downfall. And it may lead to the downfall of some of the characters in Eclipse because they were willing to listen. Well, you know what? Let me give them one more chance. You know, I gave them one chance and they betrayed me. I gave them two chances and they betrayed me. I gave them a third chance. They did it one more time. Let me go ahead and give them that fourth chance because maybe this time they'll listen. Maybe this time will be different. And then when it turns out that it's not, I don't really know that you have a leg to stand on, right? Like they showed you who they were the entire time and you just chose not to listen. So it's kind of a, as I said, a broad idea and something I just wanted to mention as I was reading issue 11 of Eclipse. It came to mind, and it's a saying that and a philosophy that I try to adopt in my own real life. And so again, it goes to show the complexity of the characters that Zach is creating, that or has created, and the story he's telling, that it can provide these kind of thought-provoking ideas that you can think about and you can relate to, and you can use them in your own life. As far as the actual specifics of the story, Zach's doing a great job with pacing, as he's done expertly since the beginning. And the story is at a point now where it's kind of hard to judge the story itself without seeing how it's all going to resolve. So that's kind of at the point where I am right now. It's like, I'm not sure. There have been times in Zach's storytelling, specifically in Port of Earth, where I was kind of able to figure out where he was going. This one, I'm not sure. He's crafted such a great story. There's so many different characters with different motivations. And as I said, there's like nobody's an easy one to get a read on, right? Like sometimes they make good choices, sometimes they make bad choices. You can always kind of understand their point of view and where they're coming from, even if you don't necessarily agree with the things that they're doing. But where this story goes, I still have no idea. And that's another part of what makes it so enjoyable, because it's like nothing I've ever seen before. The idea is so crazy and out there, and I just can't wait to see where it goes next. And I probably could ask Zach. I'd be like, okay, let's sit down and talk about where this story goes. Like, what happens? Tell me all about it. But I'm not that guy, and you listeners should know that. I want to read it and discover it for myself as it's being released. That's not to say that Zach, you know, gave me, you know, the final four issues or however many are left and said, okay, here they are. They're ready to be read, that I wouldn't read them, right? But I wouldn't even want to read the script because I want to see the great Giovanni Timpano art and the Flavio Dispenza colors. Flavio's been so good since he's come on the book. So the art's excellent, really fast paced, really dirty and gritty and visceral. And it definitely suits a post-apocalyptic world. So, you know, kudos to Giovanni. And what's cool about Flavio's work is that there's actually some pages in the back of issue 11 where Flavio kind of explains his coloring process and why he makes the choices he makes. So if anybody's interested in being a colorist, I certainly would recommend picking this up. And there's examples there, like you'll see the black and white image, and then you'll see the image with the flat colors, and then you'll see the final finished product as it appears in the book. So you're getting some invaluable information here with these work in progress shots. And, you know, I've said it 100 times. If you're not reading this book, you need to. Eclipse is absolutely excellent. The first volume of trade paperbacks is out, so you should be able to go and get caught up relatively quickly. And things are coming to a head for sure. It seems like the danger is ramping up, and all the various players of the story are all starting to converge in one spot, which is usually a pretty good indication that something big is about to happen. So as I've done from the very first issue, I definitely recommend reading Eclipse. It's a hell of a ride. All right, now I'm going to talk a little bit about Infinite Dark. As I said, we had Ryan on the show previously to discuss it, and it's another really great idea, right? The heat death of the universe, which actually doesn't have anything to do with heat. It has to do with balance and equilibrium, and basically the fact that atoms and molecules in the universe move towards a state of equilibrium. And that movement is what allows life to exist, basically. But at some point, everything is going to balance out. And at that point, there's no such thing as light or heat or any of that kind of stuff. Everything is just kind of a void. It's kind of blackness. And that's the idea that Ryan is grasping here, that we have reached the point of equilibrium. We have reached the point where it's the heat death of the universe, and mankind saw this end coming, and they created a kind of a life raft, if you will. But unfortunately, the end came a little quicker than expected. And although there were several ships carrying different civilizations of Earth heading toward the Orpheus, heading toward this lifeboat, none of them actually made it there. They couldn't outrun the heat death. And so the only people left on the Orpheus are basically the support crew that built it, and like a security team and a few others. So it was supposed to hold 150,000 people. It has less than 20% of that. And in the midst of basically the end of life as we know it and the end of the universe, we have this very small group of people who are attempting to just survive and hold out until the next big bang to see if they can basically restart a civilization by kind of reseeding an inhabitable planet if they can find one. So again, a lot of this is discussed in the episode I did with Ryan. We talked a little bit about the idea of balance and how the heat death of the universe and fears and things like that, because this is very much a horror book. Even though that's the setting that I just told you about, what really kicks off the first issue is a murder. And the head of security, Deba, is like, you know, there's so few of us left. Why anyone would murder is a big mystery. And what's hinted at in issue one is that perhaps there is something out there. There is something that still exists, and it's not friendly, and it's not nice, and it's downright scary. I mean, can you imagine being trapped on a spaceship, a space station, whatever you want to call it? The universe and life as you know it has ended. Your loved ones are gone, and you know, you look out the window and all you see is blackness. For as far as the eye can see, you are literally in the infinite dark. The sun is never going to come up. Morning is never going to come. So that's terrifying enough. And you couple that with the survivor's guilt of thinking, what makes me so deserving to still be here when billions of others have perished? Again, it's a big shoulder, a big responsibility, a big guilt trip, right? And so it's bad enough to be dealing with that and trying to find the strength and the motivation to keep carrying on, because who knows if life will ever start up again, right? So you're dealing with all that, and you know, a lot of it can be self-imposed. You know, I fully realize that. But then all of a sudden, out of the darkness, out of that void, there comes something, some kind of entity, right? That's got to be, you know, the most terrifying of all, because there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. There's not, the universe doesn't exist anymore. You're out there in this blackness, in this void. So again, much like Eclipse, expertly paced. I love a lot of the ideas that Ryan is trying to explore here. He's got an essay in the back of the book, which is interesting as well. It talks about horror as comfort. And really, I think we could even expand that to just story. Story can be comfort. It can help us escape. And kind of delight us and distract us and get our minds off things. If that's what we need, if we need to use it as an escape, story does all that. And particularly horror can make us look at ourselves and realize that we all face our own monsters in a way. We can kind of follow the story arcs of these heroes and these survivors in these horror stories, and we can, you know, relate to them and be inspired by them and kind of put ourselves in their shoes and draw courage from that. So there's a lot of good here. It's Andrea Muti art, who he did the art on Port of Earth, and it was excellent. This is much tighter, and it's a much different look to his art. No less beautiful, no less impactful. And I think he does an incredible job. And I also have to shout out the colorist, K. Michael Russell. Not real easy to illustrate a book that's science fiction and horror and the heat death of the universe and has flashbacks and a lot of other really cool, like, science fiction type things. You've got to be able to capture all of that. You've got to be able to capture some level of tension and horror, and at the same time make this kind of space station feel cold and kind of clinical and antiseptic in a way. So I think the entire creative team did a really great job, and I'm a little fearful of what's out there in the infinite dark and what Deva is going to discover, but I'm also really, really intrigued and curious about what exactly is out there. So I definitely recommend Infinite Dark, just like I recommend the Eclipse number 11. I think they're both worthwhile. And again, great job by the entire creative team, not just Ryan, not just Andrea Muti, but K. Michael Russell on colors, and also Troy Pateri on letters. He always does an excellent job. So I'm going to go ahead and close out the episode, but don't forget, I'm going to play that Stephen Mooney interview from New York Comic Con at the end. But first, I want to thank everybody for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, next convention I'll be at is, and my last convention for the year, I should say, is Comic-Con LA, the last weekend in March in Los Angeles, California. So look forward to seeing a lot of you there. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hey, this is Jace coming to you live once again from New York Comic Con. I'm here with comic creator Stephen Mooney. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man.
Big fan, especially of Dead Hand, and not to keep you listeners in suspense, Stephen has hooked me up with an autographed copy of the Dead Hand trade paperback. I will be giving that out. More details to come on that later. So, but I wonder, I always like to ask people the first time they come on the show, their history with comics. Did you grow up reading comics? Always loved them?
I did. I grew up reading the European comics, like, you know, Tintin and Asterix, books like that, which would be in the French album format, or like a wider 48-page albums, so they're only actually one issue a year, which was the norm back when I was collecting comics. So when I discovered American comics and the fact that they came out every single month, it kind of blew me away a little bit. I was about 12 when I discovered American comics. My first was the Jim Lee's X-Men, like a lot of guys my age, was the big one that I saw in the local newsagent, that they had the newsstand version of the book, and I just I signed up for the subscription. First ever one. It was a big commitment to me, spending my pocket money every month on the same thing. But I mean, from there, I didn't look back. That was it for me. Once I realized that people could make a living doing that, it blew my tiny mind, you know, and it still kind of, to an extent, it does blow my mind, like, living changes from year to year, sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, but then you sit down at the drawing board in the morning and realize that you're doing this, you're doing your dream job, and it is pretty crazy, like, so,
yeah. Yeah, and what is some of your previous work that our listeners might be familiar with?
Early days, I did a lot of licensed books. I did all the Joss Whedon Angel stuff at IDW. It was my first kind of thing that anyone knew me on. That was about 2007, 2008. And then I was at IDW. I did a creator-owned book called called Half Past Danger, which is my own book, which I wrote and draw. The second series just finished there earlier this year before Dead Hand. So that's kind of my own baby. And after I had finished on that, DC got onto me. They had seen it and they had liked what they saw. So then I did a few years in the Bat Office on books like Grayson, Midnighter, and some Bombshells and things like that. And then this year I'm just finished up with a Dead Hand now. I've been on that for about a year and a half with Kyle. It actually took us quite a while to get the book out because it's very dense, all the research and everything that went into it. But we're really happy with the end product.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners aren't familiar, remind them what's Dead Hand about.
The Dead Hand is possibly fictional. The reports vary as to whether it's whatever put into initiation or not, but it's either way, I don't think it was personally, but it was a perimeter defense system that the Russians had developed as a nuclear response threat to the US in the Cold War. So basically it was meant to be this autonomous system that would react in the event of all the heads of state being wiped out. This system would, an emerging AI, would be able to make the call that this, we're going to retaliate, all the nukes are launching. So you can see how that would be construed as a massive threat to not just America, but the rest of the world. So we kind of played with that will they, won't they aspect of whose finger is on the trigger, is there a finger on the trigger. It's good stuff. Obviously we took a lot of liberties with it, but the Dead Hand was, at least in theory, a real project that the Russians were developing.
And how did you get involved with the book? Did you know Kyle from the Bat Office?
Yeah, exactly. It was at New York a few years ago, actually. We were out for drinks after. The Bat Office does a dinner at New York where all the different teams from all the different books on the way out. And Kyle, I think, had just come off Nightwing at the time. We just got chatting like over a drink, like you would to anybody, and a lot of our interests were very similar. We were both big Bond fans, big Metal Gear Solid fans, that kind of military / sci-fi. So we were just figured out, and then the whole, you know, the conversation turns to, ought to be cool to do a book someday together. And 9 times out of 10 that doesn't pan out, and it's just talk over a drink. But we just kind of kept in touch then, and we spitballed a few ideas, and we came up with the basic premise then together, and then Kyle went away and fleshed the whole thing out before I started drawing on it.
Yeah, I really feel like your art particularly captured like the tension and the paranoia and the anxiety of the Cold War. I mean, that's when I grew up.
Mine, yeah.
I can remember being, you know, 10 or 12 and worried, laying in bed worried that the bombs are on their way right now.
Well, that's nice to hear.
What was it specifically about this title and your art that you were able to infuse that feeling?
I think across the board, I just went a lot darker. I mean, I'm quite old school. I think I'm quite traditional in my tastes. I like the old-fashioned draftsmanship styles, and that'd be what I would lean towards. But I would never have used as many shadows in something like Half Past Danger or something like that. It was much lighter, frothier. So this was all, everything was drenched in black, and it was, everything was, whatever was behind the corner was always hidden. There was never a full landscape shown or anything. It was just the paranoia. I just had things creeping in on the edge of every panel where darkness was encroaching on everything, and it seemed to be effective. It's a simple tool, but it works if you carry it through the entire storyline. And then the people, the characters just always having that little edge of paranoia about them. Nobody really smiles that much in the book. It's just little tricks to kind of employ that, give it an uneasy edge. So it seems to have been successful, yeah. Going in, though, I wasn't sure how I was going to portray that at all.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't even catch that smile thing until you mentioned it. And nobody ever...
It's just setting the mood, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Exactly. And you've mentioned, you've worked on some superhero books before,
yeah,
where we're literally seeing these superpowered beings doing things on the page that are literally impossible in our real world. So visually, that's very appealing to us,
yeah,
right? You've got to keep things appealing in a book like this where it's much more grounded. Is that a challenge when there's not these incredible events happening, and how did you tackle that?
Yeah, definitely. That was a concern of mine, actually, because It's basically it's about people. This story. It's a moral play. A little bit of sci-fi, but mostly it's about the five spies and the kids. So. How I ended up tackling that was Kyle came up with the idea for the origin of these. I don't know if you've seen, there's these kind of spreads in the book where I do these montages.
They're awesome.
So Kyle would give me, they were originally, the first one had been written as panels, and it was 1 to 5, character A does this, character B, we see him in his childhood, we see him on a mission, whatever. So I thought, I was just trying to think of some sort of a visual hook, because just with a bit of bombast. So that's how I came up with the idea of just merging all that stuff together and making it into like a, almost like a dream, murky dream sequence of how this character came to be, and that seems to be definitely what people have responded to in the art, and I love doing that stuff, so I think I'm going to take that as and try and make it a bit of a thing and carry that into the next book, you know what I mean? So whenever there was an action scene, I tried to make it hit as hard as possible, because there'd been so much talk and drama up until those points. I really wanted, and you can tell Geordie's colours as well, she kind of just blew the colour out and it all goes yellow or it all goes red, and suddenly it's all very graphic. So that little device like that, but it was a real challenge. Like, it was near right to catch that. I was a bit worried going in because I was known as an action book guy,
right,
and this is a political book almost.
Yeah.
But I think we found a nice balance where it worked out. I hope.
Did you need something?
Oh yeah, I just wanted to know when I definitely
tried. He should be back. He's on a signing till 12:30.
Right.
So maybe 10 minutes walk time. By 12:45, he should be back.
Right.
That's what he told me. Whether or not that plays out.
Anyway.
Now you mentioned it's a very much of a talking head book,
yeah,
at times. If there's an artist that's starting out, what advice would you give them on handling those scenes? What can you do when you can't get around it? It's, you know, for 5-6 panels in a row, it's two people talking. How do you keep it interesting?
My basic advice, and it is hard to do that, is to move the camera as much as possible within reason. You don't want to be doing upshots, downshots, worm's eye view, just for no reason whatsoever, because then it starts to look forced and silly.
Right.
But I would never show the same angle, the same mid shot of an angle. Of each sequence. I mean, if somebody's going to react, pull the camera back and show them reacting. Or if there's a horrific element, bring the camera right in and slam zoom in on that character. So it's basic stuff, but it does work. It's very effective. And it is things you have to learn right out the gate. But it is, that's one of the harder things to do, is to keep a talking head scene interesting. And there were a lot of that in this. So whether or not I was successful at it is anyone's guess. But it's not, I mean, that's an interesting challenge to have, you know what I mean? Plus, those pages don't take, like, compared to something filled with background or a huge vista of a science fiction complex, like, that's 3 or 4 days' work. A nice talking head scene, you can really make up some ground on your deadlines that way. So, you know, it's a little blessing in a way when you get something like that. Guys in a dark room across the table. Like, I like seeing those from the scripts.
Yeah. Get a little break, maybe you'll get an hour.
A good writer will incorporate that as well. Like, he'll know how to budget the time of the artist.
Yeah.
Like, Kyle is good at that stuff.
Well, this book was so amazing. I told Kyle that I'd love to see more of Carter and Natasha, especially maybe the early days, like pre-Roger, right?
I would hope to as well, yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd put you on the spot. Like, how excited would you be to return to the world?
We've talked, we were just, myself and Kyle, we would both be happy to return. It actually depends on this trade. The issue sales were like fine. They didn't blow the roof off anything. I mean, it sustained itself, but we had said from the start, because this arc was so, it's quite self-contained, like there is a bit of an ending on this 6 issues. So, but it also leaves it wide open. So if the sales are good on this book, and then I'd say in a year or two, we might come back, but it's such a big if, you know what I mean?
Right,
but
yeah.
We're both already on the next thing. And especially Kyle, who's a writer, is probably 2 or 3 next things.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to say, but I would happily come back and do more. I love playing with the world that we've created. And I feel like it's quite a unique, it doesn't really remind me of any other current book, which is always a good thing. Like, it's had its own little niche, I think. So hopefully, I mean, that's the honest answer. There's nothing definite whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, if people come in their droves and buy this book, it's pretty definite that there will be more. But if it just is okay, it's not that likely, you know what I mean?
Well, I personally loved it. It's weird to think about having nostalgia for my childhood paranoia, but
yeah.
You know, you really did such a great job of capturing the kind of that era. So thanks for the time. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I can't say what I'm doing next, so maybe if they want to check out Half Past Danger 2, which just came out before The Dead Hand, and Kyle is on Winter Soldier now with Rod Rice. It's looking really good, so maybe just check those out, especially Winter Soldier if you want a similar vibe as The Dead Hand. But that's pretty started yet. Yeah.
Okay, so you said you can't mention what your next thing is, but where's the best place to follow you on social media? That way, when you can announce,
Twitter,
it, people won't.
Facebook, any of those, you'll find me. Yeah, it's just Stephen Mooney on Twitter. You'll find me.
Okay, great. And I'll put links to Stephen's social media in the show notes, everybody, so you can go there to find it.
Thanks a million.
Hey, thanks for your time. Have a great
pleasure.
Show. Really appreciate
Thanks for having me.